around the front of your house, lock them, shut the doors, lock them, put the keys away from the little kids. And then one thing that was interesting, on it was on GMA this morning, it was teach your kids to honk. If they get stuck in the car, teach them to honk. Mm-hmm. Teach them where the horn is. Teach them how to lay on the horn. Because many kids get stuck in the car. They climb in it. They think they're playing. They're getting out of the sun. But they don't know. You know, they forget. Teach them to honk. Just like you teach them to put 911, teach them to honk.
Right.
You hear a car going off, they'll draw some attention. And if you're missing a kid, the other thing was the first thing to check is cars and pools.
Mm-hmm.
Cars and pools. But with this heat, that's what it brings you. But, hey, get out there and enjoy it because it sure beats the rain, I guess. But,
absolutely.
And don't forget the SPF, guys, the sunscreen out there. We don't want Affleck paying off on their cancer policy. So use the SPF out there and have a good time. We'll see you later, guys. See you next week on Friday at 3 with Home Team. Thanks, guys.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Iran is claiming to have seized two British oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. Iran state media is reporting the tankers are captured for violating international regulation. The move comes a day after President Trump says U.S. forces took down an Iranian drone for flying too close to the USS Boxer in same waters. President Trump and the First Lady are commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing.
Tomorrow is a very big day because tomorrow will represent 50 years from the time we planted a beautiful American flag on the moon.
During a ceremony in the Oval Office on Friday, the president called it one of the greatest achievements ever, and the president also repeated that we are going to Mars. Fed Reserve officials are signaling that they may cut interest rates by a quarter of a percentage point at their July meeting. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
It is a horrible scenario, but it happens. Dennis writes about his wife. She was diagnosed with leukemia. In fact, she's a two-time survivor, and in the midst of all that, they ran up over $1 million in medical bills. Thankfully, they're MediShare members. And Dennis says they are so thankful for that, how others came together to meet their needs. And that's how so many MediShare members feel. This is not health insurance. It's different. You don't have to pay for things you don't believe in. And like Dennis found out, it just works. So if you join MediShare, not only do you save a lot of money, the typical family saves about $500 a month, but you know where your money's going each month. You're helping people, and if the time should come, they'll be helping and even praying for you. So yes, it's different, and as more than 400,000 people now know, when it comes to healthcare costs, different is beautiful. Find out more. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Iran says it has seized a British oil tanker in the Strait of Hormuz. Iranian state media reports that the oil tanker was captured and supposedly violated international regulation. This is the second tanker Iran has seized for what it claims are violations in the past week. Another airline is extending cancellations of its Boeing 737 MAX flights even further. Here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes with the details.
Southwest Airlines now says it won't fly its 737 MAX models until at least November, or maybe even longer. The move follows similar recent schedule changes by American and United Airlines. It now means that cancellations of about 180 flights a day out of about 4,000 Southwest flights will occur, and it's due to the continued uncertainty over when those MAXs will be certified again after two fatal crashes involving them within 5 months killed 346 people.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
Democratic Senator from New Hampshire Elizabeth Warren was confronted by a voter in New Hampshire over her claims of Native American heritage. Participating in a conversation with the candidate forum at a New Hampshire ABC affiliate, the voter said that she also was incorrectly told that she had some Native American history. She asked Warren how her and other voters are supposed to get over the senator's dishonesty when it comes to this issue.
So, I grew up out in Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and like most people, my brothers and I learned about who we are from our mom and our dad.
Right.
My family is very important to me, and based on that, sometimes, decades ago, I identified that way. But nothing about the way I identified ever had anything to do with my academic career. The Boston Globe did an extensive piece on that about a year ago.
Okay.
Even so, I shouldn't have done it. I am not a person of color. I am not a citizen of a tribe. And I've apologized for any confusion and over tribal sovereignty, tribal citizenship.
DNA results show that Warren was between 1/164th and 1/1024th Native American. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good afternoon. I'm Pat Smits, and I've been looking for the weather, although I could probably do the weather by heart, and so could anyone else if they've been out there. I can't believe that it says that it's only currently 92 degrees. It certainly feels a lot warmer than 92 degrees, and in fact, people really have to be careful working outside. And I say this because I understand that giant player died of heat stroke. I'm very concerned that these kids are out playing football. They should not be outside playing in this weather because even kids and teenagers are affected by it. And in any event, they said the high, and there is, in fact, an excessive heat warning now until 10 p.m. on Sunday. This afternoon, mostly sunny, high of 94 degrees. I think it actually got warmer than that, hotter than that. Certainly in the sun, it's hotter than that. And tonight, there's about a 20% slight chance of thunderstorms and then partly cloudy. Tomorrow, hot, high of about 97 degrees, so it's going to be the heat index will be higher than that. And by tomorrow night, low down to about 78, still pretty warm. On Sunday, mostly sunny, and then there's a chance of thunderstorms, about a 40% chance of thunderstorms, because, again, whenever it's this hot, There's always a chance of thunderstorms, but both Saturday and Sunday, you can expect 97 degrees. By Sunday night, there's about a 50% chance of thunderstorms. There was certainly a lot of damage, especially in Ewing. I don't think we had it here, but electricity was out, poles were down, Upper Ferry, Lower Ferry was really a disaster. There was a question of whether or not there was a tornado. I don't know if that was confirmed, but it was really, you know, bad weather. We've all heard about the electricity that went out in New York City. So in the middle of that horrendous heat, people didn't have air conditioning, and they were faced with really bad storms. We had the rain, at least in northern Hunterdon County, had some wind, but certainly not to the extent that they had. Whatever went through in Ewing was pretty significant. So my program, it's the, not the sports guys, that's next, it's the law. And I do apologize, I got stuck last week in a mediation that should have finished by about 3 o'clock, and we ended up going until after 6 o'clock, so I could not get here and could not really give anybody notice. So whatever was played for you, those of you who are listening, I do apologize. So let me come back with what's going on in the legal world right after I give you some information about our sponsors.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Okay, good afternoon again. I'm Pat Smiths. I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County. My practice is limited to family matters, certainly also some guardianships, but basically family matters. I try not to talk about the type of law I do every week because that would even be more boring. And what I'd like to do and do like to do and will do today is just talk about some of the cases that have been decided, and also wanted to speak about bail reform, because I think that's been something in New Jersey that's really proven to be a success. But before that, before I start, I think that there are lots of questions about the taxes. As you know, our tax laws changed, and it's important for you to understand that people always think that there were personal exemptions. Well, that personal exemptions have been eliminated, and they're no longer under the new tax law. If you have 1, 2, or 6 children, you no longer can take that tax exemption. In 2017, there was a personal tax exemption of $4,050. So that can be significant. The other thing that is really significant in New Jersey, and people don't seem to understand, is there is a $10,000 cap. If you take personal deductions, in other words, if you don't take the standard deduction, then there is a cap of only $10,000. And that is not just on property taxes, but it is your property taxes and your state income taxes. So I've mentioned this before because it really hits people in states like New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, California, and I think Massachusetts. But that is really significant. What they have done is changed the standard deduction amounts. For example, in 2017, a married filing jointly, the exemption was $12,700. Now, the standard deduction for married filing jointly is $24,000. So that has been raised, and what it means is that many people, because of the cap on state taxes and real estate taxes, they really have to file a standard deduction. And as I said, the personal exemptions have been eliminated. However, there are child tax credits, and there are the amount of the credit. Now, there are some thresholds. So for people, for example, married filing jointly, you're not entitled to it if you're earning $400,000 or more. However, the amount of the credit is $2,000 per child, and the refundable portion allowed is $1,400. Now, as far as I know, this has not been changed, and so that is still the situation. So people really have to take a look because for many people, this, of course, is going to offset the loss that they might have because they have to cap real estate taxes and state taxes. So again, these child tax credits, even people who are filing standard deductions, they will be able to get this. But of course, those people who have no children, and as I recall reading, it also depends on the age of the child, that it's $2,000 for younger children, but I think that changes if your children are older. What this does mean is that it's very important for people to get good tax advice, and it also means that there are lots of people who really are not understanding the tax law. One of the things that I recognize, because I do family law, do divorce work, in the past, alimony paid to a spouse, with some exceptions, was deductible to the person paying the alimony. So they were able to deduct that amount from their income, and the person who was obtaining the alimony would have to include that on their tax. And, of course, it made a lot of sense because it was tax shifting, and it made it possible for the people paying alimony, usually husbands, to pay more because of the tax savings. And because the former wife, we did this when there was a discrepancy, and because the former wife was paying a lower percentage in taxes, it made sense both ways. But in any event, I just did want to bring up the child tax credits and the fact that there no longer are personal exemptions, because this is very, very confusing to a lot of people. And as far as Social Security, maximum wages you have to pay Social Security on is $128,400. The maximum employee rate is 6.2%. However, for those of us who are self-employed, the rate, not the maximum rate, the rate, the employee tax on that up to $128,400, that is a 6.2%. If you're earning the maximum that's taxed, you're going to be paying almost $8,000 a year. And if you're self-employed, and that's many, many people, small businesses, are in fact self-employed, and if this year, for 2018, I shouldn't say this year, because for 2018, the maximum was slightly under $16,000, and for 2019, it's almost $16,500. So these are pretty significant amounts that are going to have to be paid for Social Security. And, of course, people hope to live long enough that not only they get Social Security, but they get it for a long time. I've often talked about the disadvantage, and it's usually been women who are out of the workforce for a number of years, because although you have to work 40 quarters, 10 years, to obtain Social Security benefits, they calculate your payments over 35 years. So think about it. Let's assume someone, often a homemaker mother, she may work for, 20 years. But that means if she didn't work for 15 years, out of the 35, it means that there are going to be zeros in 15 years, and then whatever her wages are for the 20, and those are averaged together, which is why often women will say to me, well, why is my Social Security payments going to be so low? I actually earn about the same amount as my husband or former husband. The reason for that is being out of the workforce for that amount of time. So I will come back just shortly, and I'm going to talk to you about New Jersey leading the way in something good, and that's bail reform.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Well, I'm back again. And before I forget, and I really don't want to do this, I want to give a shout-out to the Raritan Police. And the reason for that is they have a program. It went on this week, and it's called Junior, I believe the name is the Junior Police Academy. And they select... my understanding is they select 25 participants in the program. It's been held this week. In fact, they had a graduation today. I don't have a child or grandchild participating in the program, but I happened to be talking last night to someone who did participate in it, and I was just amazed at his enthusiasm and what he told me about the program. And this is usually a young man who is not real talkative, and I don't know him well, but he told me about much of what they were able to do, where they were able to go. They were taken to our old courthouse, our beautiful historic courthouse here. He said that he'd actually seen the law office and what a number of us did a few years ago as we put together a law office. It's a room next to the main courthouse in the old historic building upstairs, and we outfitted the law office as if it was a lawyer from 1930. And kind of interesting, I guess, it was interesting to the kids to see the old typewriter, the old phone, and they probably didn't even realize that there is actually a Rice copier that one of the attorneys had and was able to donate. And it was interesting because apparently the copier back in the 30s, they used rice paper, and of course they had to get the rice paper from Japan. And once they no longer could trade with Japan during the Second World War, they no longer could use the rice copier. But I can't imagine and don't even know how many decades later most of us started using copiers. But in any event, it's if you ever get to see that, it was interesting. They were also taken to the old jail. When I say the old jail, I mean the jail behind that courtroom. And they were able to, you know, see that. They went to what many of us call the new jail, which is no longer being used because prisoners are now being housed in Somerville, which is another story altogether. Apparently, they went to the State Police Museum. They were able to see the dogs that are trained. The Raritan Township Police have, I guess, what I would call drug dogs. They were able to do that. And they were able to do a number of other things. They went to the courthouse. They saw the prosecutor's office. And I just think that this kind of a program is really special. And I think it will have a lasting impact on the, I don't know if it was only boys, and I apologize for that. The young man I talked to was a boy. And I know he's going to talk about this to his friends. Of course, they learned about drugs. They talked about and saw, you know, what is done. There was, apparently he said there was a drug dealer's car that had been confiscated, so they learned that. In any event, everything, this kind of a program, I think is very special and really important. And I think that there should be more programs like this. And my hat's off to the Raritan Township Police Department for whoever sponsored this program and for all the officers who, you know, cooperated. I'm sure this isn't the most fun thing they do. And I'm sure that they also wonder sometimes if it's worth it. I can certainly tell you with what I talked to this young man, he really got a lot out of it. And I know that he's going to be talking very positively about this. And I'm sure that the other thing is the importance for police officers. I don't even know how to say this, but, you know, there are too many kids today that don't realize that the police are here to help us, and especially in certain communities, they don't look to the police as their protector. And I think that whatever views this group of kids had, their views were certainly much more positive because of their interaction with the Raritan police officers. So, again, my hat's off to you. So the other thing I wanted to talk about, because there's a lot of misconceptions, especially about bail and whether someone should be released on bail. And what is important to know in New Jersey, and hopefully we will never be confronted with this, but what did happen is on January 1st, 2017, a significant change was made to New Jersey's pretrial release system, and it was formally categorized, and most of us still talk about it, as the bail system. So the statutory bail provisions and court rules were modified to minimize, and if not eliminate, but I don't know if it's totally eliminated, cash bail. And instead of cash bail, the courts had to consider and measure a couple things. One, the risk that an accused will not appear at all at any required court appearances. And secondly, the risk that that the accused will commit another crime while on pretrial release. And also, the impact of release on the safety of individuals or the public at large. And this has to be all considered prior to permitting a defendant pretrial release. I think that a lot of people are now looking at this because of the Jeffrey Epstein in New York. And, you know, he was trying to get out on bail, and he wanted house arrest. And the judge in New York focused really on the risk, the flight risk, because this is a man who obviously was a flight risk. He's facing the possibility of life in prison. He has all the money in the world to be able to leave. The latest I've heard is that he had a fake passport. He had the money, diamonds, a private plane. So obviously he could easily have left the jurisdiction. And there is a question in a case like that, even if he had a monitor, a bracelet, whether or not they would be able to pick him up in time if he, you know, cut off the monitor and just, you know, did it when he was about ready to board his plane to leave the country. Actually, the judge focused more, apparently focused more, on the fact that, not that he would not appear, but that was secondary to the risk that he would commit another crime on pretrial release. And apparently they had significant information that led them to conclude that, in fact, he would keep offending. But in New Jersey, this was New York. He's held over in New York. In New Jersey, there's little doubt that the changes that were made were primarily motivated by the inability of people charged with low-level crimes to raise and post cash bail. I mean, there were so many stories of situations where even though the amount was set very low, maybe $2,500 or less, they could not come up with the bail and could not come up with the amount of money that they would have to pay a bail bondsman to pay the bail. And also other areas of interest, of course, related to these charges, they're discussed in many articles. And, of course, that would be risk assessment and release of detention. However, the interesting thing is how the New Jersey model had its genesis, and that it did when the New Jersey Constitution was amended to allow courts to detain defendants to assure their court appearances in the future and to protect the safety of the public. And also, there was this was a constitutional amendment in 2014. Now, while the voters approved the constitutional amendment, ironically, it authorized what we called preventative detention. And in furtherance of criminal justice, there was a pilot program. Actually, there was more than one pilot program utilizing risk assessment analysis. And as a measure to address needless delays, there were new speedy trial rules enacted to require those detained would have to be indicted and tried within specific periods of time. Well, I can tell you what this did was because there were rules and regulations that criminal trials had to proceed, it really created a backlog in family cases and in civil cases. For example, those of you who remember, there was this tit for tat in Essex County. Governor Christie basically just stopped appointing judges in Essex County. And the reason he did that is that the senator from Essex County required one of his appointees to go through the process that everyone has to go through, meaning they had to go through whatever hearings there are for people who are appointed to those positions. However, the difference was the person could be acting as interim or temporary in that position. So it wasn't as if the governor couldn't appoint the person he wanted to appoint. It's just that he couldn't appoint him to a permanent position. Whereas in what happened in Essex, because there were no judges who were being appointed, and there was incentive for judges who could retire to retire, was a perfect storm, because what happened is there were so many vacancies in Essex County that even though they had judges being assigned to Essex from other counties, they just couldn't handle the backlog. I had a case that ended up a very difficult divorce case that ended up getting, you know, I can't remember the number of years. I mean, it was really years before the case could be tried. And then another problem, the judge was sent to another court, and it had to start over with a new judge, which is not usually done. But that was the problem. They stopped having matrimonial trials. They stopped having other trials so that all the judges could deal with the speedy trial rules to overcome the and address the needless delays. So the American Civil Liberties Union, the public defender, attorney general, all supported the new rules. I mean, these were good new rules. And so the impact, is important because the new bail release statute and the rules have had a profound statistical impact on county jail populations. So the analysis that I was able to find available on New Jersey judiciary website revealed that the non-sentenced, and I'm just trying to remember when I pulled this off the website. I'm sorry I didn't. So it could be somewhat old. But in any event, non-sentenced pretrial jail population plummeted from 7,173 on January 1st, 2017, to 4,967 on January 31st of, I can't remember if that's 2018 or 2019. I guess I have to look at that again. I don't think I wrote down exactly. I think it might have been 2019. But in any event, it plummeted, and it plummeted significantly. So there was a decrease in 30.2% of the people who are jailed. Excuse me. Excuse me. I'll go to a commercial if I can't speak. They can file, the state can file detention motions. And when they did, and as I said, in January of this year, I think this is 2019, I apologize if it's old. But out of the detention motions filed, 37% were granted, and 42% were denied, and 21% were withdrawn or dismissed. So the state police crime statistics from January to September 2018, as compared with the same period in 2016, dramatically demonstrated a 32% reduction in homicides, 13% in rape, and 30% in robbery, 18% in assault, and 30% in burglary. So that was significant. So there's been some indication by defense attorneys that the prior failure to appear component is prejudicial to racial minorities and poor, especially the weight apparently being given to failures to appear in municipal court matters. So in New Jersey, there's a Pretrial Justice Institute, which evaluates pretrial justice priorities released a comparative state analysis and reported that in terms of grading, New Jersey received the only A, and the country on a whole received a D with respect to dealing with pretrial issues. And as of October 2017, New Jersey was the only state to have almost completely eliminated money bail. The District of Columbia had done that previously. And also, New Jersey had a comparatively low pretrial detention rate and uses a validated pretrial assessment tool. That was very interesting. And most other states had a high pretrial detention rate. And the however, since then, there have been legislative action to modify bail practices in a number of states, including California, Alaska, and Connecticut. California, in August of 2018, became the first state to completely eliminate cash bail by enacting the California Money Bail Reform Act. And that act went into effect October of 2018, so that there's not really enough in the way of statistics to date. Although critics have asserted that the government's risk assessment analysis will in fact lead to unnecessary detention and that its algorithms are racist and judicial detention is unbridled. However, the laws patterned on New Jersey's standard that pretrial detention can only be ordered, and this is a quote, can only be ordered, quote, if there is a likelihood that no condition or combination of conditions of pretrial supervision will reasonably assure public safety or the appearance of the person at trial. So in the public safety analysis would, of course, at least be part of that would be whether or not the person is expected to commit other crimes, because that would, of course, mean that that would be a condition and a reason, because if somebody is going to commit or they think they're going to commit other crimes, that would, in fact, impact on public safety. And, of course, we know that most people actually appear in court. I was recently in immigration court, for example, and I don't recall a single litigant who was supposed to be in court that day not showing up. There might have been one. I don't think so. But these people who are subject to deportation come in. So we'll be right back after we have a brief some of our other sponsors. I don't know if there's much more to say about this. I think what I would like to do in the near future, although New Jersey obviously has been in the forefront of bail reform, and of course there's collateral benefits to that because there's a provision that defense attorneys have the right to extensive discovery, and the provision obviously of extensive discovery by the prosecution prior to detention hearings. In the end, everybody hopes that bail reform will fairly deal with those who are financially incapable of raising even a low bail. And the cost of housing pretrial detainees will be substantially reduced. We know that. And the other impact is the number of people who will lose their jobs if they are detained. And that's something that very often no one thinks about. But, you know, I'm not saying all, but certainly a substantial percentage of these people are not only supporting themselves, but supporting families or helping to support families. And the impact on children when a parent is jailed. So there's so many other issues that, support the fact that You know, people should not be in jail because they cannot afford the bail. There are certainly people who should be in jail because they're a danger if they're let out and are back in the community. So, I mean, that is always going to be the fact. There has to be some risk taken, but no risk means our jails are overcrowded. Taxpayers are paying for them. And the only difference between a middle class and a poor litigant is the fact that the middle class and upper class criminal or someone accused of being a criminal, or I should say accused of criminal activity, some can get out of jail and prison because they're going to be able to make whatever bail is set, and others are going to remain in jail because they don't have basically a few hundred dollars to get out. So back after a few spots from our sponsors, and I'll let you know what's happening in some of the recent cases.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, I'm back. Pat Smith, last few minutes of the program. Just trying to think of, apparently there is a lawsuit. The attorneys general, both of New Jersey and New York, have filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Treasury Department challenging a decision by the federal agency to block state programs allowing state and local taxes to be fully deductible as charitable contributions. So that's interesting. Let's see what happens. In other words, can we have state and local taxes deductible as charitable contributions? And the argument is, wait a minute, if they're not deducted as of right, are we being and giving the states some kind of charitable contribution? Not sure that's going to go far, but at least it's interesting. And so let's see what happens. Not a lot of real interesting, interesting to most people. Case that was a published but an unpublished case the Police Benevolent Association appealed the dismissal of its claim that the city committed an unfair practice when it unilaterally changed its method of calculating pay for officers on military leave. And so apparently prior to 2011, the city had no formal policy regarding military leave, and the issue was not addressed. And then in 2011, the department issued a general order setting forth the method of calculating paid military leave. And the PBA filed an unacceptable practice charge. Parties settled the charge with a memorandum of agreement, and then the PBA filed the current unfair practice charge 2 years later after the city changed the schedule under which officers would be paid. The PBA asserted the city violated the statute. The hearing officer granted summary judgment in favor of the city, and the PBA argued it did not waive its right to negotiate the method of calculating the pay for officers on leave, and that the statute preempted the general order. The court disagreed. Neither statute specified how pay and time for military leave was to be calculated and did not preempt the general order to the employees at issue and did not preempt negotiation of the calculation method. However, additionally, the court found that the PBA's right to challenge the application of the general order to its employees at issue in this case had been settled. So since the case was settled, the court was not going to deal with it. And one of the things about statute, and it is important that the statute has to be plain language. You have to, you know, you can't have a statute that is ambiguous. If it's going to be enforced, it has to be, you know, the statute itself has to be plain language, not ambiguous. And I'm not picking up a case right now that cites to that, but every statute, it has to be plain language to be enforceable, because if not, then people can have various interpretations, etc. There was another Republican confirmed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, and Peter Phillips. The concern for people in opposition was his lack of experience. So now the state Supreme Court has agreed to consider whether a company's, meaning a business's, failure to accommodate an employee's medical marijuana usage provides the basis for a discrimination claim. So in other words, and this is medical marijuana use that an employee really can justify for that use, and can the employer fire someone? And it'll be interesting. This is going to be an interesting case. And the question, of course, is, you know, I think may depend on what the employee what the employee's job was, because we can certainly understand that someone on medical marijuana may be able to function with no impairment. On the other hand, personally, I'd hate to see someone who's driving a big truck driving if he was on medical marijuana. And maybe that is my sense. Maybe that other people would disagree. But my concern there would be the safety and the possible jeopardizing the safety of other drivers and people traveling in other vehicles. And so I think that that will be an interesting case. There was, as I said, there are many cases not published this week. There was, there was a question about real estate. Ditech was the plaintiff, and the in this case, the defendant appealed from a final judgment of foreclosure, and the defendants had executed a mortgage to secure a loan in 2004. The promissory note showed one defendant as the sole borrower. The mortgage was assigned to Ditech in 2013, and Ditech filed a foreclosure action in 2015. So in this case, the defendants filed a motion to dismiss, and the trial court struck their answer and entered default against them. Then Ditech forwarded the plaintiffs a copy of a notice pursuant to the Fair Foreclosure Act, and final judgment was entered in January of 2018. The court noted pro se defendant's brief was woefully noncompliant with court rules, and his argument seemed to assert the plaintiff lacked standing to foreclose. So while a fraudulent mortgage had been taken out on behalf of defendants in 1997, that mortgage was discharged, and a trial court found defendants were not responsible for that mortgage. The note defaulted on in this case, in the different cases, arose from a separate transaction that had nothing to do with a fraudulent mortgage. And therefore, the plaintiff in this case, Ditech, demonstrated possessive standing through assignments and possession of the note and mortgage. So this had to do with the fact that Ditech is one of these servicers. Interesting, I thought that Ditech, I'm pretty sure that they're in bankruptcy, and there's certainly questions about their business tactics. But this is a situation here, and again, it's a very important to have an attorney, have a good attorney, and make sure that your rights are protected in these cases. There was a land use and planning case, appellate division, Motley versus Finelli, and in that case, the plaintiff appealed from dismissal of his damage claims against the architect. And the property had a grandfathered building on it, and in 2008, plaintiff planned to renovate the building due to structural damage from a burst hot water system. So the zoning board denied a variance to add a second story, and plaintiff hired the defendant architect to design construction plans. Apparently, the borough approved a permit to repair and renovate the existing building. And in 2010, the borough informed the plaintiff that the construction was beyond the scope of the permit. And after litigation, the trial court found the plaintiff exceeded the limitations of the zoning permit and after plaintiff's appeals were exhausted, the board ordered plaintiff to demolish the structure. And plaintiff sued the defendant architect, asserting that They sued the defendant architect, asserting that the architect's negligence and carelessness damaged the plaintiff, and that a licensed professional should have really known that removing walls would violate the zoning ordinances. And then the trial court granted defendant's motion to dismiss on timeliness grounds, and plaintiff argued the discovery rule